Well, hello, and thank you for joining me again on the podcast, where today I'm delighted to welcome fellow trance medium Sarah Tyler Walters.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure, Sarah. This is the first time we've met, of course.
It is, but I have heard of you, obviously. Names get moved around over the years, so I was familiar with your name and your work.
Yeah, well, vice versa. I was going to say, your name's popped up several times, and I must confess, it's been on my mind for a while to contact you. So I'm glad when I did, you agreed to join us.
To be honest, it's nice to meet other trance mediums. We are very sort of isolated as a group. We're dotted around. There's not so many of us, so it's always lovely to meet another fellow trance medium.
That is true, actually, and I'm kind of guessing that perhaps like myself, you're a champion of trance, being a trance medium yourself.
I hope so. I hope that's how people view me. It's definitely my passion and my intent.
Yeah.
Perhaps a little over much of a champion at times. The passion gets the better of you, but no, I always advocate for it as much as I can.
Yeah, well, there's nothing wrong with a bit of passion. I mean, you need a bit of passion to do what you do. I was just looking at some of the previous trance mediums that we've had on here. So you're in good company. People like Elaine Thorpe, Summer Bacon, Warren James, Andrew Codling, Al Fike. Some of these are American. Aidan Hall, Ray Edwards, and one or two others. If I've missed any off there. I'm sure they'll forgive me, but every one of them, works in a beautiful, unique way, and I know you do too. So let me begin with a question that I always ask my guests: how did you first become aware of your abilities, Sarah?
As a trance medium, later than you might think, as a person who would going to be in partnership and work for spirit all my life, as a child, they were just always there. So aware of spirit for as long as I can remember. And then there was a period of 10 years when spirit weren't in my life. And when they came back, it was like, well, no, this is who I am. This is what I want to do. And that's when I started to train as a mental medium, so doing proof of survival.
Yeah.
And when you're sitting in circle, as far as you're doing the same as everybody else. But it turned out that actually I was sort of wandering in and out then. I was doing classical, sort of straightforward mental mediumship, but at times I was also wandering into trance. I was definitely being overshadowed, but I wasn't aware I was doing anything different to anybody else from my perspective.
Yeah.
And as is always the case with spirit, other people in the circle knew trance mediumship very well. And basically, one of the ladies who I love dearly, we did the circuit for 10 years together. She's a dear friend, rang me up and said, oh, there's a workshop on Saturday. You're coming. I'm picking you up at 8 o'clock. And it's a trance mediumship workshop. It's like, oh, okay, all right. And that was kind of when I first got the mention that it was trance I was doing rather than mental mediumship.
Yeah.
So on that workshop, it was the first time someone just said, no, that's trance. You're not doing that, you're doing this. So it kind of all kicked off from there and just kicked off and kind of escalated very, very quickly.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So just taking a step back, if I may, you said you were aware of spirit as a child. I guess I was also, although I didn't realize that I was. So how did you sense spirit? Did you see people or
No,
did
I
you
used to
hear
see them. I mean, I full on used to see them. I'm quite lucky in as much as I'm third generation. So there's a little bit of having done something on both sides of the family. So if you start talking about dead people, everyone just went, yeah, that's fine. It was totally accepted. There was
them?
no hiding it or shunning it, or you mustn't talk about it. So I was really in a good position that if I was talking to somebody in the corner that nobody else can see, it didn't matter. It's just, oh, that's what Sarah does, and my father was knew of mediums. He knew several mediums at the London Spiritual Mission, So he would get information from spirit through them, the working mediums group, and they would get him to ask me things to confirm I was seeing what I was seeing, and he would have the answers. So there was a lot of checking in to make sure who was talking to me and who wasn't, and that, so spirit kind of worked through a couple of mediums there to get information to my dad. My dad would then ask me the questions to confirm it. So we had, I'd bring them home from school. We had a lovely man who lived in my kitchen for a year, and they just were here. They were always here, and it was just normal. Got a little tricky sometimes that I couldn't always tell the living from the dead. That was a little bit tricky, but yeah, it was just normal.
So the lovely man that lived in the kitchen for a
Yeah,
year,
Albert. Yeah.
Albert, right? Okay, was
Albert
he?
lived in the kitchen for a year. So he was stood in the doorway, and he was just with us for a year. And he was one of the ones Spirit tested me on. They had given my dad the questions to ask and told him what the answers should be. So this is what is his name. His name is Albert. What is he wearing? He's in a brown corduroy jacket with brown trousers, and he had brown hair. And it was just these little bits just to confirm that yes, that is genuinely he's there and he's not a threat. He was just there as part of keeping an eye on me. So, and making sure everyone knew it was safe and it was okay. He was there to protect me in that way. So yeah, Albert was lovely. He was with us for a year, and then it was time for him to move on, and he moved on.
Job done,
But yeah, it was a bit like Piccadilly Circus in our house at times.
It's interesting, though, you say that, about family members, because you very often find, don't you, that mediumship does run in families, like, because mediums have to have a certain disposition and genetic constitution, genetic makeup, I think, to facilitate what we do. And you very often find, like, a granddad or grandfather or a great grandmother or someone in the past was a medium,
And I think it helps because it takes out all of that secrecy and don't talk about it. And, there was never anything evil about it. It was always just completely normalized. And that, and I've met other mediums and actually other trance mediums who come up from very, very different backgrounds where it was, no, you mustn't do that. And, horrific things because of how they were received because they spoke to the dead. And I'm so grateful that was not my entry to it.
So, I mean, you mentioned this 10-year period where you nothing
Yeah.
happened much, or you step back from it. What happened?
Yeah, that's one of those moments with spirit. Yeah, that's one of my stories that is between me and spirit.
Okay, fair enough. If you don't want to mention that, that's fine. But obviously, something brought you back, something,
Well, yeah, it yes, it was
kindled
always
a flame again,
oh no, it was always meant to come back. took a little longer than had been previously agreed, but yes, I'd spent that 10 years waiting for it to come back.
Okay, so I noticed from your website that you, to this day, I think you work for the College of Psychic Studies in London. It's interesting because people seem to go either one route or the other. It's either Man United or Man City. It's going to be Arthur Findlay College or the
Yeah.
College of Psychic Studies. I went down the Arthur Findlay route. You took the
Yeah.
other route.
And to be honest, it wasn't a conscious decision. It was again spirit giving the message that there's a class there, go and join the class. And that was it. That's how I got my first foot through the door, was actually studying there. So that's where I developed the trance mediumship. I went on to be a student of Robin Wimbo. I would then became his teaching assistant and took over his classes when he retired. So there wasn't a conscious choice, but I know what you mean. It is are you, and actually in London, it's are you the College of Psychic Studies or the SAGB? But yeah, there was no conscious choice. It was really just where I was led. That was absolutely where spirit wanted me to be. It's where all the doors opened. And so hence why, I been teaching there. I've been working there 20 years this year.
Wow, 20 years,
Yeah, I know.
a lot of changes in 20 years, but it's
And within the profession and with how we're viewed and within the work, a lot of changes. Yeah.
So do you sort of tend to do most of your work within that college, or do you go out and do demonstrations elsewhere?
As I said, I did 10 years doing the church circuit. So, because I originally trained as a mental medium doing evidence, I started on the church circuit as an evidentiary medium. 2003, in the middle of a church service, Spirit announced that, well, they didn't really want me to do that anymore. They just wanted me to do the trance. And it's like, I've got an audience, and now you're saying that, but that's very my relationship with Spirit. So from that moment on, I've only done the trance. And I did it in the churches, which was quite a challenge, because there's lots of issues to how it's perceived and how it's allowed. And so I worked in the churches for a long time doing that because I think it's important. You learn so much about spirit, you learn your craft. It's also about doing your dues for spirit, your payback in a way. And it's sad. I find it sad sometimes that people shun away from the churches now. They don't go into them as easily as they did when I was a student. And I think that's a shame. It's such a missed opportunity. But it also becomes quite difficult as a trance medium to get churches to open their doors to you.
Well, I find there's a bit been a quite a shift really, because like you, I've worked as a platform medium for 45 years, still do some services now. But I think, it's gone a lot more towards the entertainment side of things. People want messages and they want to be entertained and have a laugh. I know I get that, and spirit do work with humor, and it is entertaining on one level. I totally get that, but by the same token, people don't seem to want, in my experience, the trance so much. They don't want to go to have to think and to go more deeply into the understanding of it,
I think in some ways that's really where Chow has made his way with it, because we do trance demonstrations. I do them at the college, I do them online. I still go out to places occasionally and do them. I'm doing one for a church in Brighton later on this year. And he has a way that he meets the audience where they are. And he doesn't just sit there and do philosophy, because you're quite right, they don't want to think. It'll just go over their heads. You'll lose the audience, you lose the energy. He does Q&A, he answers their questions, and he grabs them wherever they are. We'd love it to all be spiritual, evolved, high intellectual questions. It never is. It's always personal or general, and that's great because it's an introduction to what spirit can help them with. It's a way of going, look, talk to us, ask us for help. But ask yourself for help. Remember, you have a soul. Talk to your soul. So he uses it as an opportunity to kind of let them get a glimpse of how spirit can help them, how their soul can help them, in the hope that then they will go on to go to see more, to learn more, to kind of be a jumping off point for people. So we find the demonstrations actually, as if we explain them what we're doing for a start. We don't, it's not philosophy. He's not going to talk at you. Come with your questions. It breaks the ice. And he is funny. I always have to warn people, Chow is very funny. He's a bit naughty. And, he's done this for a long time. He's had thousands and thousands of human incarnations. He gets what it is to sit in those chairs. And he grabs them, he holds their attention. And I think that's the only way forward. You have to bring them in to the work. And when you do, then they come back for more and they come back for more. And I know that because the recordings of all his lectures, all the master classes we've done, people buy them, people listen to them, people then mention, oh, I was listening to this one and da da da. And has he ever thought of doing one on this subject? And it's how you get them to engage. We have to just meet them where they are now. And audiences are.
It sounds very similar to my own White Feather, because White Feather can be very funny and engaging pe with people. And we always say that he treats everyone with the same respect, regardless, of who they are, regardless of gender, color, creed, race, religion, belief. He treats everyone the same. And sometimes, we've Like Master Chow, I mean, Whitefeather's answered literally thousands of questions without a moment's hesitation over
Absolutely. And that's the thing. There's not a moment's hesitation. There's
the
no waffle. He's straight to the point. Or he will say he doesn't know. You know, if he can't answer it, he can't answer it. And sometimes you can't answer it in a public demonstration because there are certain things we can't talk about. And he's respectful of that. And he gently goes, look, this isn't the right place for that question. You know, so he never just waffles over it or kind of ignores it. He always will handle the question with as much respect as he can, even if it is actually, this isn't the right place for that question. Or, are you sure you want me to answer that in front of a room full of strangers? You know, because I can, but are you sure you actually want us to do that here? You know, so he will give people the choice sometimes because they aren't always thinking, hang on, everyone is going to be listening to this. And that will colour how he can answer it because he will have to keep some things private, you know.
Whitefeather's the same. I mean, he's diplomatic. Sometimes, he will get into a, he never argues, never loses his temper, never raises his voice. No, nothing like that. But he will always say the truth is the truth is the truth. And I'm not changing the truth for anyone,
But sometimes, you know, they have to go, no, we have to respect that there are people in the room with different opinions. So, out of respect for them, I'm not going to answer that question because they have to be considerate of the entire audience. You know, and that I think is also one of the lovely things about spirit is they are taking the measure of everyone in the room. It's not, if you're in an audience scenario, everyone matters. You know, in a one-to-one, then absolutely. You're making the choice of what you ask. You're giving permission then for the answer. But in a room full of people, he doesn't have everybody's permission to answer that question. And if the answer might affect other people in the room, it's about being respectful to that.
I totally get that, and you can't argue with that point really. I
Mm.
don't know whether you find the same as I do. When Whitefeather starts talking, you'll talk for about 15, 20 minutes, a bit longer sometimes. Then he'll invite questions, and sometimes people are a little bit hesitant to ask the first question. But by the end of the evening, it's you can't stop the questions, and people bounce off other people, don't they?
Yeah, and I have to say that's one of the things we don't do. He won't just talk at the beginning. He's straight in. Where's the question?
Oh, right, straight
Oh
in,
no, it's if you haven't come prepared, what are you doing sitting in front of me? It's that, where's my first question? So no, he won't just sit there and just talk at them. He will sit there in silence for 15 minutes if no one sticks their hand up with a question, because it's no, I've come here to answer what you want to know. What do you want to know? You've
That's
got
fair.
to meet us. So yeah, no. And you know, we've never actually just sat there for ages waiting for a question. Someone has always had the courage to put up their hand. And but you're quite right. You also get one question bounces off to another question, bounces off to another question, which is brilliant. But yeah, no. Straight from the beginning. It's okay, who's got the first question?
So, how did Master Chow first announce himself to you? When and how did that happen?
So when I started the trance training, I worked with, I had a barmaid from Bethnal Green who was a hoot. She was an absolute laugh. I worked with several archangels. You know, Gabriel is still a dear close friend and still around a lot. But I had a Tibetan monk to start with, and he was the one who spoke the most, and he was absolutely beautiful. Always left me feeling totally serene. You know, I had this deep inner peace when I'd worked with him. But there was an Oriental gentleman in the background. And other people had mentioned, oh, I can see this Oriental gentleman. And I was aware of him. And occasionally he came forward and said the odd word, and then the Tibetan monk would come back in. And then one day, no Tibetan monk, Oriental gentleman stepped straight forward, said to everybody in the room, I'm Master Chow, who's got a question for me? And that was it. And that was the sort of beginning, and he has not left since. And that would have been, so We say that we've been working professionally together since 2003, so 20 years. But obviously, we had some time before that getting to know each other and getting used to it. So he's been around for sort of a 2 years prior to that. So we're getting on for 22 years that we've actually been together, but 20 years professionally.
And he shows no signs of abating. He's going to continue with you as long as possible.
But I mean, he's not the only one I bring through. I also bring through the Oracle. So the Oracle being a collective consciousness that come through, and they are more the philosophy, the big questions. So they do some of the bigger lectures. They don't do Q&As or one-to-one sittings. So they are slightly the kind of more bigger picture conceptual information. Whereas Chow can come right the way down to day-to-day practical life or right the way up to the big question.
So just staying with Master Chow for a moment too. Because I often say to people, when they say I've got such and such a guide with me, did he give you any sort of cross reference to who he is, to prove his
Right.
identity
So
or?
to me, no, because he doesn't talk to me. To other people, yes. So at the beginning, when he came through and he was sort of saying he was Master Chow, people did then ask him questions, which everyone then kindly gives you the answers to. So what we know of that lifetime is it predates Christ. And there are a few references he has given us about that lifetime. How it was he died and things that he did, and he was a sage and so on, very much into Tao. So we know bits and pieces about that life, but he's also very clear to say that's just one of many. It's just the persona I enjoy coming forward at for the work I'm doing with humanity now. It's his comfortable pair of slippers, as he calls it. But he will draw on insight from any of the lifetimes that are relevant to what people are asking.
That's interesting, that is. Whitefeather says something similar. He says that even though he sort of presents as a Native American Indian, he often says to me that he's gone beyond that,
Yeah,
but he
absolutely.
uses that persona, if you like, that identity when
And
he's working for
it's
me.
because humanity accepts it. You have to, again, it's that meeting the audience where they are. Humanity does have a view of Native American Indians, wise Chinese sages. So they're archetypes in that sense, but they're also actual lives that they did live. But they are also an archetype that humanity will accept, and therefore you get past that first barrier of why should we listen to you? Because as Chow says, his last incarnation, he died around the age of 12. He was a boy from London. He said, if I came forward as Johnny, who would listen to a 12-year-old boy? You would immediately shut down. You wouldn't pay attention to what he was saying because of your view of what a 12-year-old boy is. But to the elderly Chinese sage, that barrier gets taken away, and you will listen and give him the chance to show you actually there's a lot of information there he can help you with.
So I think this is a very important point that we're discussing now, because particularly in this day and age of artificial intelligence and online fraud and people saying they're one thing when actually they're something else, so looking at it from an outsider, playing devil's advocate for a moment, somebody new to this sort of movement, if I can call it that, and to transmedia mediumship might say, well, anybody can say, they've got such and such a guide with them. And now you're telling me that's only a persona, that's not who they really are. And we're sort of leaving ourselves open to an extent to being accused of fraudulent
Right,
behavior. So
but
I
the
think this
proof
is
is,
why it's important that guides have to back up who they say they are or were in that particular lifetime,
but the proof is in the pudding, because very much from Charles' point of view of doesn't matter whether you believe in who he is or not. Doesn't matter if you can prove that he was ever existed as Master Chow. What matters is in the moment when you've asked him a question, does that information help? Are you open to listening to that information? You can disregard it. He doesn't mind. You have free will. He would never breach your free will. The thing is that if you listen and just consider it, if it's helpful, fantastic. If it's not, don't worry about it. It is just an access to information.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, again, White Feather will say, I often say to people, look, this is how I see it. This is how I'm explaining it to you. Take it or leave it. If it fits, take
If
it. If it doesn't,
it
reject
resonates,
it, Okay, so you did mention, I think, earlier before we started that maybe Master Chow would like to speak,
Oh yeah,
to the list.
he'll take any opportunity to talk, Rob.
He doesn't need much encouragement.
Doesn't
So,
need much encouragement, no.
is this
As long
something
as
you
you
think
have
we
questions for
could
him,
do?
as long as he ha you have questions for him, he's very happy to come
Well, I haven't
forward.
got any questions lined up, so he's, you're probably putting me on the spot there, but
Oh, he'll put you
it
on the
So, yeah, I mean, if you feel you'd like to speak, then he's most welcome.
spot. Let's see. He's chuckling to himself, so he'll see. He's sure you'll have a question once you meet him. Okay. On your head be it then. Okay. I'm talking to him, not to you, with that comment. That's
Yes.
recorded.
Well, same applies, Ronnie.
I know you, I spend my life talking to people who aren't there. This that I'm always talking over my shoulder to him. I forget sometimes people don't realize that it's Chow I'm talking to. Ready? Ready. Okay. All right, hold on. Oh, good afternoon.
Hello.
And hello to your communicator too. I'm aware he's standing over there. Hello.
Hello.
Oh, got a wave. Okay. So, what do you want to ask?
Okay. We're led to believe that there's a great awakening taking place at the moment, with all the evil in the world and all the dark things that are happening beneath the surface. There seems to be a great change, and people are waking up to their true nature. Is there anything you can say about that?
Oh, I see. That's my own fault for asking you for a question, isn't it? You've gone straight for the jugular with a really good question, but also a very serious question. So, how to do it justice in a short period of time? Firstly, I think question your idea of a great evil. Evil is very much a human word. It's not a word that spirit would ever use. We don't talk about good and evil. They're all things that you learn from. You're just learning in a very extreme way. You don't need to, but that is what you're doing. So when things are kind of tipping the scales in one direction, what you want to be careful of is not swinging all the way to the other direction. That is not balance. That is just another extreme. So at the moment, you're tipping all the way to the most negative version of things. But the idea of this awakening, you have to be careful because what it's trying to do is it's trying to swing the pendulum all the way over to the positive, 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 wee side. But that's not good either because that's just another extreme. What you need to be doing is coming back into a place of balance, back into a place of personal responsibility, self-love, non-judgment. So within that awakening, there is both truth and the swing to the other side. You need to be careful how people are talking about it. There is a shift going on. It's that battle within yourself. But at the moment, it's a battle between these two extremes instead of coming back into your true selves, coming back into balance. And that's not going to be the resolution you're all hoping for. It's just going to push everything into a very different type of conflict. So notice the pendulum swinging. Notice that it hasn't yet got to the pinnacle on the negative side. Still got some distance to go. And driving it all the way over to the positive is denying your own shadow. You are light and shade. You have to bring those things into balance. And you do that through the mid path, through the midway. Not through it's good or it's evil, it's light or it's dark. You are both. You do it through harmony. You do it through coming back into balance. You do it through looking hard at yourselves in the mirror and healing yourself. All this trying to heal the world, you're not doing a very good job of it because you're not healing yourselves. It has to start from the inside journey.
Hmm.
You've often been told that it will take one of you to change everything. But you see that person in slightly the messiah type idea, the savior.
Yeah.
Never consider the one is you. And every one of you that comes back into your own balance starts to shift the whole thing back into harmony. That is so powerful.
Yeah.
Because if you do that, you'll stop the pendulum doing these vast swings. You'll have little movement, but that's the design. You're meant to. That's how you learn. But these vast swings can stop if you all come back onto path.
I
If you all
understand.
look at your own shadow
I understand
instead
that.
of projecting it out all the time.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the idea of the awakening, you have to be careful because they used to just be ego. You have an ego, it can get in the way. There we go. But now there is spiritual ego, whole other layer of ego. And spirituality, mindfulness, new age, age of Aquarius, all of this has now developed its own version of ego. And that is trying to trip you into bliss. And that is not harmony. That is not going to be the salvation you're all looking for. It will feel very good for a very short period of time, and then you will all crash back down again. So be careful. What is driving your awakening? Is it awakening, or is it the spiritual ego just telling you, oh, you're woke, without having done any of the work? Have you healed your past? Have you healed any childhood trauma? Have you stepped into self-love? Not love, clappy love, woohoo, la love, woohoo, no, self-love. Can you look yourself in the mirror and actually say you love yourself? Are you taking responsibility for your life and understanding cause and effect and the consequences of every thought you have, every action you do? Are you standing in non-judgment? Now, if you can do all of those things, then you can awaken. But if you're not, and you're saying you're awoken, that is your ego tricking you. You
Very true, very
have to
true.
be careful. Lots of big words, very small actions.
Yes. This sort of leads me into a second question, if I may. We often hear that, and I tend to believe this, that we are the creators of our own reality, that what we experience in the so-called outer world, we are the actual creators of that by our thoughts and our actions and our beliefs. So what we think, what we believe, what we intuit and what we imbibe, we actually manifest in the outer world. Could you comment on that? Is that true? Is there anything you can
It's
say about that?
true, but it's like most things. There is a caveat to it
Okay.
because you have to be careful with the idea that you could create anything. And no, you can't create anything. That the manifesting is within certain boundaries, if you like. Because also all of you are doing it. So you're also canceling each other out. So on the face of it, it's a truth. But the reality is very different to the truth would suggest. So you are manifesting things, but you also have to consider who you mean when you say you. So your ego is manifesting things. Your fear is manifesting things. But ultimately, the one that should be doing it all is your soul. So there's truth, but be careful who's doing it. The idea of I is not very helpful because half of you do not know who you are. So who is I? So in principle, yes, that is truth. In practice, oh, it looks very, very different. And where so many of you are actively trying to manifest things without thinking it through, you're also canceling each other out. Or you're escalating things in the wrong direction. Again, cause and effect, consider the consequences. So you have to be considerate of what you're doing. Why are you doing it? What's driving it? What's driving that creation, that manifestation? And what should be? Because some things are also being created by your soul. Some things are being created by Mother Earth because that's her right to do it. So you aren't the only ones doing it as well. That also needs to be factored in.
Yeah.
So there's lots of things that are manifesting the reality, and you are either amplifying, canceling out, or colliding. So when there were only a few of you, far simpler, worked like a dream. Now there are billions of you, not so good, bit of a mess.
Yeah.
But the principle is still sound.
And do all of our thoughts and our actions and our beliefs and everything that we do, does all that feed into the collective unconscious?
The collective unconscious is a tricky one because people use that to mean different things.
Right.
So, in as much as your thoughts have created a collective consciousness of humanity, now it's a consciousness, not an unconsciousness. You
Yeah.
might be unconscious to the fact that you are feeding it, but it is conscious.
Yeah.
So, there is a collective consciousness of humanity. And your thoughts and your beliefs, as you say, are feeding into that. The big problem is that, of course, the more you fed into it, the more it has become its own reality, its own driver. It has its own desire to survive. So it is also influencing back. There's a feedback loop. So you're not only just feeding it, you're now being fed by it. And you always have been fed by it a bit, hence why pyramids are everywhere. Okay? So it
Yeah.
has always been a reservoir for information to come back to humanity from your own thoughts, your own creativity. But it's become a very unwieldy thing. And it's now wanting to survive in its own right and drive things in a way that perpetuate that. So the more that you are disengaged with yourselves, not considering of yourselves, the more you are feeding it, the more it is surviving, but the more it is also controlling. So, have to be slightly careful what you're doing with that, and consider also that it is trying to mimic spirit too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, talking about spirit and the afterlife or wherever it is that you're speaking from, does what goes on down here, in the material world on the earth, does that have any impact in your world?
I guess it really comes down to the idea of impact.
Yeah.
I think, to be fair, no, not a lot. Far less than perhaps you might like to think. But also a lot, because we are also invested in it. Or a lot of us are invested in it. I mean, there are a lot of beings in spirit who are so far removed from you, they don't even know you exist. So you have absolutely no impact on them. But those of us that are invested in humanity, you do have an impact. We are growing, we are learning through your experiences. So for us, it matters what you're doing. We consider it. We are hoping to be assisting in it,
Yeah.
mostly because we are trying to help Mother Earth, the spirit that actually inhabits your planet. Our job is to make sure she follows her path to the end. So there are also those whose sole goal is to ensure she fulfills her pathway. But for a chunk of spirit, your existence is irrelevant. They are
Yeah.
so far removed from that need. They are so much devolving, in a sense, into the point of becoming just the very substance of spirit that you have no impact on them at all. But your idea of spirit is also flawed.
Okay.
Well, you said afterlife.
Well, there is no afterlife, really, I suppose, but because there's
But
no death,
also,
really, there's only life, isn't there?
but it's a level of perspective.
Yeah.
Humanity does not die and go to spirit as the after. You
Yeah.
start in spirit and you go to humanity. So, if anything, you're in the afterlife.
Yeah.
Perspective is only really a point of highlighting when you are talking about spirit. Remember, you are looking at us from the human perspective, and that doesn't always give you the right view. You have to put yourself in our shoes, in a sense, and try to look at it from the pure spirit perspective in order to get things the right way around. Otherwise, it doesn't line up and it jars, and it doesn't give you the satisfactory information you're seeking because it's limited to the human perspective because you're standing in a human form.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to think outside the box, quite literally.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But just going back to that previous question, if I may, which you answered beautifully. I'm thinking back to, I think it was Silver Birch, many years ago. He was speaking about the numbers that pass over in for example, world wars, and all the suffering and the sudden passings, you know, in the midst of battle and war, and in effect, you know, there's a lot of people, perhaps ignorant, who are passing suddenly from this earth into the spirit world, and that was what I meant when I'm saying, you know,
Oh,
does
from
this have
that
an
point of view,
impact on the
okay.
astral planes?
No. So, see, again, human perspective, not
Yep.
spirit perspective. Spirit perspective, you have to understand we've been doing this for a very long time. So, you are not the first life forms we have inhabited, you are the last life forms we are going to inhabit. We do have this a little bit sussed. So, we also understand that there are times when things have to happen for the greater good or for the greater learning. And those are times when there might be a large loss of life because it serves a different purpose, either to teach humanity, to cause a wave of compassion, to spark something. Now, all of those who pass under that guise, yes, have
Yep.
it in their contracts that that's going to happen. They have a clause in the contracts that they are willing to go under those terms. So that clause means that when they do return to spirit, often very suddenly, they don't experience the same shock that they would if they were, say, suddenly hit by a car, because the clause kicks in. So the clause kicks in and actually almost prepares them instantaneously for coming back home. So they don't arrive in the same sort of shock as an actual true sudden death.
Yeah.
And they all go into reflection. It doesn't matter how you passed, how you left this earth, you all, your souls all return into reflection. You have to sort of think of reflection like a big giant hospital meets university, meets care home, meets palliative care sometimes, meets getting ready to go back. Okay? So all of that processing happens in reflection. And in reflection, there is an enormous amount of care given to every soul that comes back home. It
Yeah.
does not matter how you pass, why you pass, or when you pass. You are treated exactly the same. There is no judgment. There is only absolute care and love for you, unconditional love for you. You may not be able to receive it when you return home, but it is always there.
Yeah.
But also, you manifest what you expect to see. So sometimes we have to spend a while getting you out of your own scenarios. But you are cared for, absolutely.
Yeah. And it would seem, if I've understood this right, that the soul, our soul knows, if you like, what our life plan is, even though, you know, whilst we're incarnate, we may not know that at a conscious level. Yeah.
It has a plan is always a little bit hard of a word. Contract is even worse. That's far too solid, too concrete. There is a book. I like to call it a book. I think people understand the book idea a bit better. It's a bit softer, gives you a bit more sense of the free will you actually truly have. So there are goals, there are lessons, there are chapters, but there might also be blank pages where your free will completely run amok. No problem. Do what you like. Soul will get you back on path later on. So it's more fluid than I think sometimes humanity has. And it has to be with so many of you. You know, the more you create numbers, the more fluid it has to be. So the soul knows what it's here to achieve, knows what it wants to learn, knows some of the markers it needs to hit because it might be involved in somebody else's teaching or a world event or just for its own learning. And it's trying to manifest and move along that path. However, your free will gets in the way, your ego gets in the way, your childhood traumas get in the way and often steer you off the path. And the soul then spends quite a long time trying to get you back on path. But it never gives up.
Oh, I know. I
And it also doesn't care if it doesn't complete. This is the other
know
one I think you all get very hung up on. If you have five lessons and you learn one, that's fantastic. If you learn all five, amazing.
that.
We don't care. Anything you learn is valuable to us.
Yeah.
And the soul doesn't get hung up on it either. So if it doesn't manage to do everything, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's
Yeah.
you lot that get hung up on it. You lot that beat yourself up and get very stressed. I
Yeah.
have to do something. I'm supposed to be doing something. No, relax. Step into yourself. Listen to your soul.
Yeah. Yeah.
Calm.
I try and do that on a personal level.
But you look, watch a lot of humanity, and they're a bit more like headless chickens.
Yeah. Tell me about it. Can I ask you one more question, if
Of
I may?
course.
In the time that permits. There's a theory going around at the moment. A lot of talk that reincarnation is a sort of a trap that recycles a facet of our soul back again onto the earth. And is reincarnation something that we can avoid if we want to? Can we continue our progress in your world?
Okay. And here again, it's all the problem is you're looking at it from the human perspective.
Okay.
And it's why it gets very stuck in an idea and in a narrative. Because the narrative you tell yourself is flawed. Because you're not actually considering the how it works from our side. So human perspective is a spirit wants to have an incarnation and it sends down a soul, has an incarnation, that soul goes back and forward, back and forward, back and forward. Yes?
Yeah.
That's the flaw.
Okay.
Spirit being wants to have an incarnation. Yes, that bit's correct. But what is a soul in context to a spirit being? You never ask that. You have to think, why are they even doing it this way? Well, they do it this way because they don't fit. If the spirit being was to come down and try to get into a human body, you'd go splat. Okay? Don't fit. We're too fast. So it breaks off a piece of itself. That now becomes what you call a soul. Programs the soul with what it wants to do in this life. That one comes down, has the incarnation. Okay? That life finishes. That soul goes into reflection. Now, in reflection, it processes what it was learning in that life. Because also, it's a bit of a shock. Suddenly I was in a physical body. Now I'm not in a physical body. There's a bit of processing. There's some time that needs to be spent. But the minute that soul goes into reflection, the spirit being sends down another piece.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That one has a life. When it's finished, it goes into reflection. So now there's two pieces in reflection at different stages.
Yeah.
Sends down another piece. And so on and so on. So the piece that's in you may never reincarnate.
Right.
The piece in you can choose never to reincarnate. It
Yeah.
will eventually work its way through reflection and go back into the spirit being.
Yeah.
So the same fragment may never actually ever come out. The spirit being is who is having the incarnations.
Yeah, I like that analogy, well, it's more than an analogy. It's a fact, isn't it? I know my own guide speaks of the di different facets, like facets of a diamond, really, and it's not always the
Absolutely.
same
Yes.
facet that comes
Yes.
back. Yeah.
And that's a
Yeah.
way of trying to think about it. So, in reflection, that one spirit being may have hundreds of souls still working their way through until they are ready to go back into the whole. But it'll only have one in a timeline at a time.
Yeah. Okay, I get that. I get that.
Because you look at time linear.
Yes,
It's
which
not linear for us, it's
no,
spherical. It's all happening at the same time, which is why the one soul going up and down doesn't make any sense.
yeah. I totally get that. Totally get that. Well, yes, that's a good explanation, Master Chow. Thank you for that.
And
Is
happy
it?
to share it.
Is there anything that, before we let you go, is there anything that you would like to pass on to the wider world, if you like? Is there any kind of message for humanity that you'd like to share at this time?
Firstly, happy Chinese New Year.
Yeah,
Would be remiss of me not to mention Year of the Dragon. Very good year.
in
Had a couple of water years, and you're all really suffering from all the heightened emotion. Now
linear
we're
terms, of course.
absolutely, and now we're into wood building. Think building. So very good things coming if you focus and you work hard. But I think my overall message is always the same. You are a soul having a physical experience. And you need to reconnect, re-listen, remember you have that soul, because it has all the answers you need. It knows why you are here. It knows what you are learning. It knows what you need to manifest. And actually, if you start listening to your soul, you don't need to keep talking to us. You don't need to keep doubting. You will have all the wisdom you need within yourself. It's
Yeah.
all there. You just have to start listening to it. So step back into self. That is your greatest gift.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that. Thank you for your wise words, and
You're
thank
very
you for
welcome.
thank you. Thank you for answering the questions, and
No, thank you for some good questions. It's always nice to have good questions. So, on that note, then I say goodbye
God bless you.
and
Goodbye.
God bless.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Sarah. That was lovely, and of course, totally spontaneous, not rehearsed at all. And you can't rehearse mediumship anyway. So for anyone that's listening to this, that was totally spontaneous and lovely to hear from Master Cho there. And I thank him and all those that work with you very much for doing that.
No, you were saying earlier on about the is it fake, is it a persona, are we making it up? And it made me think of one time. I'm very lucky that Chow and the Oracle that I work with do lectures. And they'll give me the title of the lecture, they'll write the description. I have no idea what they're going to talk about. And they will deliver anything between a 60 to 90 minute lecture.
Wow.
And I never know what they've spoken about or what they're talking about. But for an audience, it's then sitting there and watching it. And I remember a young man in the audience when we were asking at the end, was there any questions or anything? He just said, I have to just put my hand up. He said, I'm a trained professional actor. And I would be hard pushed to sit there for 90 minutes holding a different voice with a different accent and talking so eloquently without a script. And I thought, thank you. That's the proof that it was spirit and not me.
It is, and I often say, with my own guide as well, and it's the same with Master Cho. There's no hesitation; it flows. Particularly when I noticed when I asked a question, the answer was right there. Pretty well coming back. They don't have to go away and think about it, and that is a piece of evidence that often people overlook.
Yeah, because we're not giving evidence as in fact,
Yes,
like you do with proof of survival, you
absolutely.
have to look at the content, the is there any waffle? Are they filling in? Are
Yeah.
they repeating themselves over and over again because there isn't any depth to what they're talking about? Can they react? Do they engage? How do you feel when you're in the room with them? How do they leave you feeling? That's our evidence.
Yeah. Absolutely spot on. Spot on. Well, listen, it's amazing how quickly the time goes. I'm sure those who have listened to this podcast to this point and have heard Master Chow will be eager to find out more about you and your work. Do you have a website?
It's transmedium.co.uk, and they'll find on there lots of free resources. So there are free audio recordings where Chow has answered things about mediumship, healing. Then you'll find also the downloads of lectures and talks he's given. For instance, he's done one on artificial intelligence. So there's ones on self-worth, love. So there's a real plethora of information there, along with articles and blogs. So I try and give as much resource for people on this journey as I can.
It's interesting. My ears pricked up when you said you'd done one on artificial
Did one on
intelligence.
artificial intelligence.
White Feather did one as well a few months ago, and it's interesting, as spirit friends coordinate information, what comes through when. It's fascinating. Always has fascinated me that.
It's because
So,
it's all geared to how are we helping humanity? That's the goal. So,
absolutely. Absolutely. So for people who are in the UK who may want to see you, I know you operate in Kensington at the College of Psychic Studies, and occasionally you go out and do demonstrations.
But they'll find everything on my website. All my events are on there. My teaching I do online and I do in person at the college. So I teach trance, obviously, as well as I'm one of the few people who teach about spirit writing, do automatic writing as well. So I'm one of the few people that teaches that as a course. So there's lots of stuff on there for people to look at.
That's great. And you do healing as well, I believe.
We do. The Oracle leads a healing team that does trance healing.
Okay, so that only leaves me to say thank you so much, Sarah, for your time and Master Chow, and I'm sure everyone that's listening to this podcast will be enthralled by what you've had to say. It's been an absolute
Well,
pleasure.
thank you for having us both.
All right, you take care, and we'll speak again soon.
Thank you.
Well, I do hope that you enjoyed listening to Sarah Tyler Walters and her spirit guide, Master Chow. And do remember to check out her website, trancemedium.co.uk, where you'll find a lot of interesting information about her work, her books, her blog, her services, and a lot more besides. So, to our thought for the month. And what better than an ancient Chinese proverb? A man who asks is a fool for 5 minutes. A man who never asks is a fool for life. Can't argue with that, can we? Thanks again for listening. And as always, don't forget to honour your beliefs, stand in your light, and remember your true nature, infinite consciousness. Catch you next time.